we are still at the beginning or at the end of chapter 5, at the beginning of our discussion of this, of the Mifgash, or the meeting between Yehoshua and this angel that he meets at the entrance to Yericho. Two general comments unrelated to the shir. The first is that next week I'm not here. So please note, I'll remind me to announce it at the end of the shir as well, that we'll be meeting next in 2 weeks, not next week. I'll put it in the bulletin. It'll be in the bulletin of the announcements. And the second announcement is that we record every shir. So if you miss one, or you want to catch up on last year's, or you just generally want to review, they are all recorded and posted on the shul website. So they are available for download and for streaming. Last week's shir is not yet posted, but please God, it will be netted by the end of the day. So I'll post them both. Okay, where were we? Let's just review quickly the story of Yeshua and this malach. Perek He, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayhi biyot Yehoshua biyericho, vayisa einav vayar, v'hinei ish omed lenegdo, v'chabo shlufa biyado. Yeshua is outside Yericho, lifts up his eyes, and he sees a man standing opposite him with his drawn sword, v'chabo shlufa biyado. Vayelach Yeshua elav v'yomer lo, halanu atalim letzarenu. Yeshua approaches him and challenges him. Are you for us or against us, friend or foe? Vayomer, lo, ki ani sartzva Hashem, ata bati. The ish says, no. The no is not clear what it's responding to, but we'll see. I am the ministering angel of God. Again, Perek Hey. Sorry, just I'll do that again. Perek Hey, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Yeah, page 2. I don't have a. Yeah. 263. It's the end of Perek Hey. So the Malach says, "No, I am the ministering angel of the army of God, Sar Tzva Hashem, and I have come now." That whole response of the Malach needs to be addressed, needs to be understood. We have not yet addressed it. Last week we dealt basically with the question of where are they encamped, and whether this story is somehow connected to the previous parak or to the parak that comes afterwards, which are the battle instructions for the conquest of Yericho. Vayipol Yeshua panav arza vayishtachu. Yeshua falls on his face and he bows down. Vayomer lo, ma aduni medaber al havdo. And he says, ma does my master speak to a servant? Suddenly the tone changes. Clearly he understands that he's talking to a malach. And the malach says to him, vayomer sar tzva Hashem. Before it said, vayomer ha'ish, he was talking to a man. Suddenly he realizes he's talking to an angel. This sar tzva Hashem, this angel of the army of God, says to him, take your shoes off from your feet, the land upon which you stand is holy. Yericho is completely enclosed, surrounded, besieged by Israel, by the Israelites. There is no entrance or exit from Yericho. The city is under siege. And then God further instructs Yeshua on the conquest battle plans of Yericho, the 7 hakafot around the city, the blowing of the shofar, that we briefly touched on last week, and we'll explore it a little more in detail shortly. At least at first glance, it looks like Yehoshua is not clear who he's talking to. He doesn't necessarily get a sense that he's talking to a malach. That's intimated by the expression v'hine ish omed l'negdo. The first time we find this reference to this individual, he's called an ish. And the second time after he explains to Yehoshua that I am the Sartzva Hashem, that suddenly he is referred to, the dialogue changes in its tone, and Yeshua refers to him with that kind of respect you would expect of a dialogue with the Malach. Not that I would know from first-hand experience, I've never spoken to a Malach, but nonetheless, certainly that would be our expectation. It is, however, possible, in that regard, Yeshua's question is also understandable. Halanu atayim letzareinu, you see a man standing there with a sword, you're not sure if it's his friend or foe, you assume it is a human being of flesh and blood, and it's not the first time or the last time that one could mistake a malach for a human being. That is not unprecedented. What is the first story that we are familiar with where where a malach is disguised as a human being? Avraham, Parshas Lech Lecha, which happens to be actually Parshas Vayera, but this coming up in 2 weeks. Vayar Einav Vayar. Actually, it's the same expression. Lifted up his eyes and he saw. Same expression that we have here, I believe. Vayisa enav vayar. Exact same expression. By Abraham. Lifted up his eyes and he saw. In that case, hinei shlosha anashim. In this case, hinei ish. If you compare the two verses, they're almost identical. So clearly, on one hand, he could be confusing this malach as an individual, and it explains why he says to him, "Who are you, friend or foe?" There's also other examples in Sefer Shoftim later on where we have stories of an individual who's talking to a malach, thinks they're talking to an individual, to a human being, or to a navi, and then suddenly realizes they're talking to a malach. For reference, you have the story of Gidon, as well as the story of Manoach, father of Shimshon, which ends in the same way. It is, however, conceivable, it is possible to construct an interpretation of this passage where Yeshua knows he's talking to a Malach. But then we would have to reframe the question. If he knows he's talking to a Malach, again, one possible interpretation is he thinks he's talking to a human being, he doesn't know who he is, he says friend or foe, and then the Malach introduces himself. On the other hand, what if he knows he's talking to a malach? What would the interpretation of the question of Yehoshua mean if he knows he's talking to a malach? Assuming for the moment that we would suggest that Yehoshua can tell the difference between a human being and a malach, what would the meaning of the question, are you for us or against us, mean if he wasn't talking to if he thought he was talking to a real angel? Could you say about a malach, are you for us or against us? That would be hard to suggest. But there is a suggestion that the role of a malach can change. There are malachim whose role it is to assist in the conquest of Israel. And there are malachim whose role it is not necessarily to fight against us, but to represent a certain distancing from the relationship between Israel and God. Specifically with regard, and specifically in the context of the conquest of Israel. The fact that the story of the conquest of Canaan begins with the appearance of a malach is not an accident. That's essentially where I wanted to go with it. The fact that the story begins with the appearance of a malach is not an accident. Because the Torah explicitly makes mention of the fact that when we get to the land of Israel, the conquest of Canaan will be assisted by a malach. The Torah makes mention of this twice. Once, in Shemot, Perek, Chaf, Gimel. Take a look for a moment. Immediately following the revelation at Sinai, Mamad HaSinai, before the sin of the golden calf. Shmot Perek Chav Gimel. The end of Pashat Mishpatim. Remember the sequence of events from Mamad HaSinai? The Torah was given at where the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, is given at the revelation at that moment in Parshas Yitro, in chapter 20, and then immediately following are all the laws of Parshat Mishpatim, followed eventually by, in Parshat Ki Tisa, the story of the golden calf and its aftermath. But at that moment, in Perek Chav Gimel, we are still in Parshat Mishpatim, and therefore still in that pre-Chet HaEgel moment, that pristine moment. So then you're welcome to move forward and join us over here. There's the Tanakh, there's books, there's sources. Come join us over here. In Perek Chav Gimel Pasuk Chav, Torah says, Hinei Anochi Shaleach Malach Lefanecha Lishmorcha Baderech. Behold, I will send an angel before you to guard you, ulahaviyacha lamakom asher achinoti, and to bring you to that land, that place that I have prepared for you. Hishamir mipanav, protect yourself, guard yourself. Ushma b'kolo, listen to his voice, listen to whatever he says. Al tamirbo, do not rebel against him. Ki lo yisalef ishechem kishmi b'kirbo, my name is amongst him. He carries my name. And if he carries my name, then you have to listen to everything that he tells you. Ki im shamoa tishma b'kolo v'esita kol asher adaber, if you will listen to his voice and you do everything that I will speak to him, v'ayavti et oyvecha v'tzarti et tzorarecha, then I will become the enemy of your enemies. Meaning I will assist in this battle. Ki elech malachi lefanecha, my malach will go before you. That I will bring you into the land of all of these nations and I will destroy them. And flip side, therefore, you must not adopt the cultural practices of the nations which I will help you conquer. So from the very outset, we are told that the conquest of Canaan will be assisted by a malach. Now it is true the word malach can mean both angel and messenger. In the context of a messenger, it could be a leader, it could be a navi. But given the fact that Yeshua shows up at Jericho and there's a malach waiting for him, known as Sar Tzva Hashem, it's not unreasonable to assume that that's exactly a fulfillment of this. When you come into the land of Israel, you will conquer via the assistance of a malach. Who said? Given the fact that so far to date they have crossed the Jordan by splitting the sea, 20-mile high mountain of water, and they're going to bring the walls of Jericho down by the blowing of trumpets, I'm not yet at a point where I would see a difference. That may come, and it will be an issue we will address in Sefer Yeshua, but at this point I'm not sure that I see that distinction, although it's an important issue we'll come back to. It is a very important issue. Now, this almost verbatim, the same passage appears again, not 10 chapters later, in Perek Lamed Gimel of Shemot. Take a quick glance, almost verbatim, with one subtle difference. Beginning of Perek Lamed Gimel. Lamed Gimel. וידבר השם ומשה, לך עלה מזה, אתה והעם אשר עלית מארץ מצרים. God speaking to Moshe immediately in the aftermath of the sin of the golden calf, before Moshe goes back up the mountain the third time to get the second set of tablets. So we are in that interim period before God has forgiven the Jewish people. We are before the 13 attributes of mercy. We are before Moshe's prayer for forgiveness. We are in that moment of what in language of Chazal is called the moment of nizifa, rejection, rebuke, push away. Vayedaber Hashem o Moshe, lech alei mizeh ata ve'am asher helita me'eretz Mitzrayim, you go and lead these people up. Go take them up to these people that you brought out of Egypt. Go take them. El ha'arat asher nishbati l'Avraham l'Yitzchak l'Yaakov l'mol l'zerachat nena. Go bring them into the land that I promised to their forefathers. Good thing or bad thing? Good thing or bad thing? Go to the land of Israel. I promised it to you, I will give it to you. Good or bad? Good, I would imagine. I say. Well, we'll see what he says. V'shalachti lefanecha malach. I will send before you a malach. Have we heard that before? That's exactly what it said in Perachav Gimel. Go to the land of Israel and conquer it. I will send a malach to assist you. V'garashti et haknani ha'amiri ha'chiti ha'apizi ha'chivi ha'yivusi. I will expel the nations. I will conquer the nations of Canaan from before you. Ha'laretz avat chalav u'dvash, the land flowing with milk and honey. Good or bad? Malach, we had Malach before, we had Malach after. What's changed? Now the next phrase. Ki lo e'ele b'kirbecha, ki am k'she oref ata, pen achalcha badarach. Go because I can't go with you. I will not place my name amidst you. I will not come with you because if I do, I will destroy you. Vayishma ha'am et hadavar hara hazeh vayitabalu. The people heard this terrible calamity, this terrible evil, and they were upset. They were very disturbed by it. And then Hashem said to Moshe, go tell Bnei Yisrael, am k'shei oref ata, you are a stubborn people. Rega achad ale b'kirbecha v'chiliticha. If I come into your mitzvah even a moment, I will destroy you. Ata hored et yecha mi'alecha, take this crown off from your heads. Anyway, there's a little crown I'm not going to get into, but what's the impression? That the fact that they're going to enter the land of Israel by the assistance of Hamalach in the minds of the people is a terrible calamity. Because it means the Malach instead of Hashem. So what the Torah presents to us is two very different paradigms of the role of the Malach. Is the role of the Malach there to represent God, to carry the name of God, to assist in the conquest on behalf of God, to represent the Shekhinah, the revelation of the Shekhinah, paradigm, Marmon HaSinai and its aftermath, or is the role of the Malach to represent the fact that God won't come near us, doesn't want to touch us, doesn't want to get involved with us because we are a rebellious people, and I'm Ksheyoreth. Yeshua is about to enter Yericho after 40 years of walking through the desert, and he sees a Malach. Was he expecting to see a Malach? I think he might have been expecting the Malach. Moshe was told 40 years ago they're going to have a Malach the moment they get to the land of Israel. The only question is, Halanu ata imatzarenu. Are you the Malach of Mamre HaSinai? Are you here to assist us in the conquest of Canaan? Are you here to carry Shem Hashem, the name of God? Are you here because we have returned to that pure level that we had before the sin of the golden calf and before the sin of the spies in the context of Brit Milah and Korban Pesach that we've achieved up until now? Are you Lanu, are you for us, are you part of that expression of the role of the Malach? Or are you the Malach of Perak Lamed Gimel instead of Perak Chaf Gimel? Are you the Malach of God won't come near us, so he sends a Malach? So it's quite possible that Yeshua is very aware of the fact that he's talking to a Malach, although, again, if I'm constructing the pshat of the story of the meeting between Yeshua and the Malach, his opening line is very defensive. Who are you, friend or foe? And then he starts talking about, are you my master? What does your master to say to your servant? But nonetheless, it's possible that he is aware of this contrast. You know, he's aware, or he's expecting a Malach. He's just not aware necessarily of whether this Malach is a representation of God's presence, Gilui Shechina, much along what we had at Har Sinai, or an expression of the rebuke of the last 38 years, and we're still there, we haven't moved forward. That could be, again, at a sort of a deeper level of understanding, also part of the undercurrent of this message. And if that's the case, when the Malach answers that he is Sar Tzva Hashem, we're going to come back to this phrase. When the Malach answers that he is Sar Tzva Hashem, Atabati, I have come now, meaning I have come now in the context of the conquest of Yericho. And in the next phrase it says, Vayomer Hashem el Yoshua, God spoke to Yoshua, says the Radak, meaning the Malach spoke through God. You get the impression that the Malach's answer is, which paradigm of Malach is he, the Malach of Perek Chaf Gimel of Shmos, or the Malach of Perek Lamed Gimel of Shmos, when the Malach says to Yeshua, take your shoes off because you are standing on holy ground, what is he saying? This is a moment of divine presence, much as Har Sinai was when Moshe stood at the burning bush. He's saying this is exactly where we're at. We are at the place of the moment of Har Sinai, as if we're standing at Har Sinai. That's the Malach of Perek Chaf Gimel. Well, so again, what I painted are two different paradigms of Yeshua's meeting with this Malach. Either he knows he's talking to a Malach, he's expecting to be talking to a Malach, or he thinks he's talking to an ordinary person out of the, and until the Malach says to him, "No, I'm a Malach," Yeshua's unaware. There are two different paradigms. I built two different levels of interpretation essentially around this passage. Because the pshat,
it already says that we're expecting an angel to lead us in.
Well, it says that God will send the angel. It doesn't necessarily mean that that Yeshua is going to meet this angel. And the fact is, the text, I think, lends itself in the pshat to the paradigm that Yeshua is unaware that he's talking to Malach, because it describes him as in the same language that it describes Avraham's meeting with the three people who Avram certainly doesn't know he's talking to angels. He thinks the three guests, Vayisa eina vayavine isha medlefana. Exactly the same expression used by Avraham, Vayisa eina vayavine shlosha anashim. So the text seems to lean towards the suggestion that Yeshua is unaware that it's a malach until he introduces himself. No, I said this was, you're talking about Perek Lamed Gimel?
Yeah.
Is in between. Moshe goes up three times.
Right.
The first time to get the Torah, Mamre HaSinai. Yeah. Then he comes down, deals with Chet HaEgel, deals with the thing, goes up a second time when God says to him this passage, no Shechina, etc., etc. Comes back down, takes his tent, takes it out of the camp. And the third time, Moshe is instructed to recarve the tablets and go up a third time to receive the second set of tablets. But that's right, let's shift our focus slightly to the story. Does everybody have the source page that I gave out last week? It's here. There are extras here if anybody doesn't have. There's also a copy of the map in case you want it. I want to, in the context of our discussion up until now, and again, assuming whether you take paradigm A or paradigm B, the message or the answer that the Malach conveys is essentially the same. I'm not an ordinary person, or I'm not the Malach of Perek Lamed Gimel. I am Sar Tzva Hashem. I have come to help you in the conquest of Yericho. I have come essentially to Atabati. I have come now. When the Malach says to Yeshua, take your shoes off from your feet, my question is, what is the meaning of that statement? Is that statement simply the fact that Yeshua is like Moshe, standing at the burning bush, and in a place of sanctity and holiness, you can't stand with your shoes on? Right? Like the Kohanim of the Beis HaMikdash, who worked barefoot and not with shoes, or as the Kohanim Duchen, they go up to the Aron Kodesh, today they go up to the Bima, they take their shoes off. Is it simply a reflection of the concept of Kedusha, or, and if so, what does it mean, or is there something hidden, something else in the message about taking your shoes off that relates to the context of this experience? That question I'm going to put out there. We're not going to answer it yet. We may answer it today. If not, we'll answer it in 2 weeks' time. But he says something very strange. He says, when Yeshua confronts him, and he says to him, are you for us or against us? His opening phrase is, Lo, ki ani sar tzva Hashem, ata bati. No, I am the ministering angel of God. I have come now. What's atabati? And I've come now. I've come now and not yesterday. I've come now and not tomorrow. He could have said, "Lo, ani satz v'Hashem." I am. Yeshua asked him who he is. So he answered, "I am the ministering angel of God's army, ani satz v'Hashem." And then he throws on two words which seem to be completely irrelevant, and that is, "Atabati, I have come now. Now and not tomorrow. Now and not next week." What are those? What is the meaning of those two words? Around those two words rages a polemic. And I want us to see the polemic, and then we'll address what it means. Polemic is an ancient polemic, goes all the way back to Yehoshua, and it's still raging till today in modern times. It's a polemic that hasn't resolved itself. What do I mean? Take a look at the Gemara in Erevin, source number 2. Very famous passage with regards to Yehoshua and with regards in general to issues related to modern Israel. I'm going to pop with Abba Bar Papa. Lo ne'enash Yehoshua ela bishvu shebitel et Yisrael laila achat mipriya urviya. Yehoshua was punished only because he wasted one whole night of Israel from being able to engage in the mitzvah of Purivu. Shenemar, Vayi biyot Yehoshua b'Yericho v'yisayna v'yar, quotes our verse, Yeshua is in Yericho, he lifted up his eyes and he saw and there was a malach there. And it says, Uchtiv v'yomer lo, lo, ki ani sarts v'Hashem atabati. The malach's answer is, I have come now. What do you mean come now? What's the now? Says the Gemara, Amar lo, the Malach says to him, listen very carefully, Emesh bitaltem tamid shel ben ha'arbaim. Yesterday, your efforts caused the annulment or the cancellation of the daily offering of the Tamid Shel Ben Ha'arbaim. V'achshav bitaltem Talmud Torah. And now your efforts are causing the cancellation of the study of Torah. What's the Malach referring to? Before we get to the answer of Yehoshua, what's the Malach referring to? Yesterday your efforts caused the cancellation of the service of the temple. Today your efforts caused the cancellation of the study of Torah. What efforts are we talking about? What did Yeshua do yesterday and today that would have canceled the temple service and canceled night seder? Excuse me?
Planning for war.
Engagement of battle. Walking through the Yarden surrounding Yericho, besieging the city. Yeshua is planning for war. Says the Sartz Vashem. Your efforts in planning for this war are causing the cancellation of the study of Torah in the Beis Medrash. And yesterday you canceled the temple service. Tevila. Says Yehoshua, al eze mehen bata. Okay, says Yehoshua. So over these two chatoim, number one, the cancellation of the temple service for the battle plans. Number two, the cancellation of the Beis Medrash for the battle plan, over which are you more concerned? Which have you come to rebuke me over? Notice the assumption of the Medrash, that the Malach's purpose is rebuke, meaning that the Medrash seems to assume that the purpose of this Malach sounds to me like the paradigm of this Malach is the paradigm of Shmot Perek Lamed Gimel, not Perek Chav Gimel. Amar lo, so the Malach says, Atabati, I have come now, meaning I have come over the latter issue. What's the latter issue? Talmud Torah? Miyad, immediately it says, V'yalen Yehoshua b'layla hu b'tocha emek. Yehoshua slept that night in the depths of the valley. It says, Vayelech Yeshua b'layla hu b'toch ha'emek. Actually, it says, that is, you know what, you've hit on a very interesting issue. I've taken this straight out of the database. I think the database has edited the passage in the Talmud. No, I think the database has edited the passage in the Gemara. Because in the Gemara it says Vayalen. And the Mefarshim all raise the question, interesting. The Pasuk says, Vayalen Yehoshua b'layla ahu b'tocha am. The Pasuk says, Yeshua slept that night amidst the people. The Pasuk here says, and the Mefarshim raised the question that this Pasuk doesn't exist. This Pasuk is a combination of two Pasukim. So it's interesting that the Gemara says Vayelech, but the Pasuk actually says Vayalen, and you'll see there's two versions of the Gemara. You'll see, okay, here it says Vayelech Yeshua b'layla hu b'tocha emek v'amar Rabbi Yochanan melamed shehalach be'umka shel halacha. When it says he walked, halacha, he walked in the emek, in the valley of halacha. There is another version that says shalan Yehoshua be'umka shel halacha, that he slept in the depths of halacha. But either way, essentially, what is the message of the Gemara? Without the textual issues are not my issue right now. What is the message of the Gemara? What dialogue under the surface is taking place between Yeshua and this Malach? It's not just a mistake. The mistake is that he prepared for war instead of for Torah. And therefore the solution is to engage in Torah instead of battle. And the pasuk that the Gemara quotes, fascinatingly enough, is a pasuk from Perek Chet, which is the story of the Battle of Ai. Which, if you know the storyline, right, was a battle that they engaged in and lost, and then had to fight three times. So, if I were to distill the message of the Gemara, forget the textual issues, if I were to distill the message of the Gemara, what is the interpretation of the Gemara as it applies to Yehoshua? Or as it applies to the Mifgash, this moment of meeting between Yehoshua and the Malach? What is the Malach saying to Yehoshua, and what is Yehoshua saying to the Malach, according to the core message of the Gemara in Erevin? But specifically what? That's right. You don't need to fight a battle. You go sit in the base medrash, God will fight your battle. Go sit in the base medrash, God will fight your battle. What are you preparing for? What are you? All your efforts to prepare for war, all they achieve is bittul Torah in the base medrash and bittul avod in the base hamikdash. Go and spend your time in the base medrash, and the Rabbanu Shalom will protect you. Sound familiar? This Gemara is one of the most profound sources of the debate over relevant and parallel issues in modern Israel today. It's often quoted, and this is the source of it. Take a look at the Radak. We're going to get to in a moment. Hold it. Well, let's take a look at the Radak first. Well, we're going to, you know, when it comes to Gemara, the assumption is that we're generalizing, but we'll get to that in a second. Take a look at the Radak. The Radak on this verse, Atabati, Radak says the following. Atabati, I have come now. Source number three. What does it mean now? So if I'm not using the Gemara in Erevin to interpret the phrase now, I have come now, then I need something else to interpret this phrase. So the Gemara says, Be'et shiri itani, masha'en kem bavasar badam. It says, I have come now, meaning the fact that you can see me. I have come now, I have appeared now. The reason you can see me now is because I have appeared now. It's an address to a different question, which is, how did you get here? How is it that you can come into our camp and nobody spotted you? Are you for us or against us? You're bothering Yeshua. Assuming we're talking, Yeshua thinks he's talking to a human being, right? Assuming that he thinks he's talking to a human being, beneath the surface of the question, are you for us or against us, is the question of, how did you get here? So he says, Ani Sartzeva Hashem, I am the ministering angel of God. Atabati, I can come. You see me now because I came now. I don't have to worry about how to get through your defense lines. I'm the Malach. I'm a Malach. So he addresses. So he answers two questions at the same time. B'yesh Badrash. There is a medrash. What's the medrash? Kibala hafchidam al bitul Torah ve'al shebitlu hayom she'avar tamid shel ben ha'abayim. That this angel wanted to came to rebuke them over the cancellation of the Beis Medrash and the cancellation of the Beis Hamikdash. Amar lo Yehoshua leizim hem bata, amar lo ata bati, klomar al bitul Torah. Shatem betilim atai, come now because of the bitul Torah that you're engaged in. Vayalen, notice the change in the pasuk. Vayalen Yehoshua betocha emek shalan be'omka shel halacha. There's two different gersot in the Gemara, but essentially comes to the same thing. That when it says that he went to sleep, it meant he slept in the Emek, in the valley of Torah. Says the Radak of this passage in the Gemara, v'zeh hadrash rachok. This is very nice for drash, but it's very far from the pshat. Why? Listen carefully to the next five words. Ki ein sha'at milchama sha'at Talmud Torah. The time of war is not the time for the study of Torah. Time for the study of Torah is the time for the study of Torah. But when the people are threatened and there's a war going on and you need soldiers on the battlefield, that's not the time to sit in the Beis Medrash. And so the Radak dismisses the Gemara in Erevin. Drash! It's very nice, very profound, very inspirational. Very encouraging and inspiring for the study of Torah, but you have to put it into context. If the people, if there's an enemy at the gates and the soldiers need and the war and the army needs soldiers, so you go fight the battles and leave the Beis Medrash to when you return home. The phrase of the Radak sounds almost as if there was a polemic even in his day, although there certainly wasn't a political expression of it. Ein shat mechama shat tamud Torah. Don't mix the two. Who were the Mefarshim? Rav David Kimchi, Radak is of David Kimchi. Rav David Kimchi was a scholar and a commentary on Tanakh. I can get you his biographical information, but he lives in the Middle Ages. Same time frame, within a couple of hundred years, same time frame as other Rishonim, Rabban Ezra, Rashi, Svarno, Chizkuni. Essentially a period of what we call the Rishonim. If you want more detail, I'll get it for you. But that's the Talmud. That's the Gemara in Erevin. Right. Now, it is my contention, and this is essentially what I wanted to suggest to you, that given a choice between the Radak's interpretation of the story of the Malach and the interpretation of the Gemara in Erevin as to what the role of this Malach is, my contention to you is that as far as the Pshat in the text of Yehoshua, which of the two is closer to the Pshat? I think the Gemara in Erevin. I think the Gemara in Erevin hit it on the head. But I have to show you why.
Isn't the Radak thinking more in terms of physicality as opposed to spirituality?
The question is, what is the Malach thinking? What is the pshat of the dialogue between the Malach and Yehoshua? We can extrapolate, we can ask ourselves the question, is whatever the result of this discussion of the Yehoshua is, we can then ask ourselves, can you extrapolate further? Right? Can you extrapolate from the story of Yeshua to our context? I leave the polemic, the political polemic, out of the picture for the moment. But to ask the question, which is closer to the pshat of the perek? My contention is that I think the pshat of the perek is in line with the Gemara in Erevin, much closer than it is with the interpretation of the Radak. Why? That's what I'm going to show you. First of all, drash doesn't mean, one thing you have to be clear about. The word drash does not mean to dismiss it, something which is to be dismissed. That's drash, it's not, Be careful of making the distinction. They're separate not because they are true and false. This is the mistake many people make. They get into this habit of separating Pshat and Drash and thinking that Pshat is parallel or equivalent to truth and Drash is parallel or equivalent to falsehood. Pshat and Drash are not equivalent to true and false. They have to be separated. Pshat and Drash are more analogous to the question of which interpretation is attempting to address the context of the verse versus which interpretation is attempting to draw from whatever level of interpretation of the verse there is, some contemporary lesson applicable to the message context of the speaker, which may or may not be related to Pshat, but doesn't have to be. Chazal spoke in Drashot because Chazal was speaking to the generation, and when they were, you also have to distinguish between homiletic Drashot, which is Midrash Agadah, and textual halachic Midrash, which is Midrash Agadah. The word Drash simply means to derive or to expound. You have to distinguish between halachic Drash and homiletic Drash. Homiletic Drash is intended to convey the message, and the message is far more important than the textual context of the verse. So I can take a verse completely out of context, give it an interpretation that carries a message that I want to convey to the people. The Drash is 100% true for its purpose, which is to learn the lessons in philosophy and ideology of Torah. It's not necessarily designed to interpret the text in context. Whereas Pshat is designed to interpret the text in context. They serve two different educational models, but they are not necessarily related to true and falsehood.
Are they on the same plane?
In many ways, Drash is more important because Masoret of Torah comes through Drashot. The Masoret of Torah doesn't come to the Pshat. The Masoret of Torah Shebal Peh, of the Oral Torah and Halachic Torah, etc., comes to Drash. So in many ways, Drash has a more significant relevance to us, should never be dismissed. The educational approach, which is very pervasive today, unfortunately, but it's 100% wrong, is to dismiss Drash as irrelevant folklore, stories, Baba Mises. Leave it. That's just Drash. Dismiss it. Stick to Pshat. It's not true. Depends what you're learning. If we were learning text of Tanakh, then Pshat has a more important value for us right now because we're attempting to understand the text. If we were learning philosophical ideals and values, or if I was speaking in the context of trying to convey an idea that represents a value of Jewish life, the Drashot have more importance and more relevance because they reflect the mindset of Chazal over the age. Pshat and Drash.
No, Drash.
Oh, homiletic and halachic.
Homiletic and
halachic. Halachic doesn't have an English translation.
So that
depends. You see, what happens in the education system today is we tend to teach Drash as Pshat. And what we do when we do that is we confuse the distinction between them. But do not make the mistake of thinking that if I'm teaching Pshat, it's because I dismiss Drash as not true or not relevant or not applicable. It's just that it has a different context and different place. Right? As an example, when I stand up in Shul on Shabbos morning to give a drasha, Pshat is the farthest thing from my address, my agenda. I may, from time to time, address a question of Pshat, but essentially I'm looking at the drasha is a message of values and lessons. Far more important to me at that moment are the lessons conveyed through the midrashim. Drashim, it's homiletic. Whereas if I'm standing here in front of you giving a class in Sefer Yeshua, I'm more concerned with the issue of pshat or those midrashic interpretations that reflect pshat. Now, that's number one. Number two, we often tend to look at midrashim superficially. This medrash, for example, and I think the Radak is guilty of this. This medrash here, this statement in the passage in the Gemara, sounds homiletic because it's couched in homiletic terms. And the Radak therefore dismissed it because he said, we're about to engage in battle. How can you tell me that it's time to study Torah? Because it's been used in such a polemic that the Radak felt that was the correct way, that was appropriate. But if you dig beneath the surface, what I think you'll find is that Chazal had a much more profound understanding of the Pshat, but they couched it in Midrashic terms. Not because, in other words, what I think the Gemara in Erevin, the correct interpretation of the Gemara in Erevin is not necessarily that the dialogue took place as the Gemara reflects, but that the Gemara is reframing what did take place in the Pshat in terminology that the people of the time of Chazal could understand. But the message, I think, that Chazal were conveying is very much reflected in the Pshat of the text itself. So let me take a, let's leave the issue of Pshat and Drash for a second. We'll come back to it throughout the year, because we're going to have many of these kinds of midrashim, which on the face of it, on the surface of it, sound outlandish, if you will. But if you dig beneath the surface, I think you'll find that the Chazal had a much more profound understanding of Pshat than we give them credit for. Rabbinic literature of Midrashic, Mishnaic, Talmudic period. Let me go back to the dialogue with the Malach for a second. Let's go back to this dialogue with the Malach. Yeshua says to him, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm the ministering angel of God. I have come now." And then he says one more thing. He says, "I am the ministering angel of God, of God's army, Sar Tzva Hashem. I have come now." And he says one more thing. Take your shoes off. Take your shoes off. That's what he says. Then the battle plan for Yericho starts. And the message, what is essentially the message of the battle plan for Yericho? Circle the city 7 times. 7 days, you're going to circle the city once a day. On the 7th day, you're going to circle the city 7 days. You're going to blow the shofar, the yovel. And then you're going to blow the shofar loudly enough, the walls are going to come crumbling down amidst the noise and the battle. And so this is the message of the Malach. Introduction. I am the ministering angel of the army of God. I have come now. Take your shoes off. And then the battle plan. 7 days. 7 shofarot. Or yovlot. To bring the down the walls. Take a look at the psukim for a moment, in the battle plan of the beginning of Perek Vav. Starting with pasuk bet, Vayomer Hashem al Yeshua, Re'ei netati b'yadcha et Yericho ve'et malka gibrei chayil. I have given Yericho and its king into your hands. Sabotem et ha'ir kol anshei ha'milchama hakif et ha'ir pa'am achat. Surround the city once. Kol taseh sheshet yamim. Thus you will do for 6 days. V'shivat kohanim yis'u shiva shofrot ha'yovlim lifnei ha'aron. 7 kohanim carrying 7 shofrot. Yovel. Yovel is a type of horn. A ram's horn. U'bayom ha'shvit ha'sobo et ha'ir sheva pa'amim. On the 7th day you will surround the city 7 times. והכהנים יתקעו בשופרות, and then the Kohanim will blow the shofar. ויהי במשוך, listen to this verse very carefully, ויהי במשוך בקרן היובל, when you will extend the blast of the shofar, כשמעכם את כל השופר, יריעו את כל העם תרועה גדולה, then let the people cry out, ונפלה חומת העיר תחתיה, and the walls will fall beneath. Big mountain of the walls, they will simply crumble into the ground. Do these psukim remind us of anything? Surround the city 7 times, blow the shofar, the yovel, 6 days surrounded, on the 7th day, we're going to go surround it 7 times, and then the great event will take place. Is that familiar at all? The whole structure of the battle plan to Yericho. Does it sound familiar? No? Turn to Shmot for a moment, Perek Yutet. Perek Yud Tet. Perek Yud Tet is the description of the preparation for the revelation at Sinai. Shmot Perek Yud Tet. Starting with Yud Bet. Higbalta et ha'am saviv lemor. Separate the people. Set them aside. Surrounding, meaning surrounding the mountain. Saying, Hishamru lachem, alot bahar nago b'katzeil. Don't go up the mountain yet. I warn you. Don't touch the mountain. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Tet. Pasuk Yud Chet, let's start with Pasuk Yud Chet. Actually, no, let's go back even further. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vayi b'yom ha'shlishi b'yot ha'boker, on the third day in the morning. Vayi kolot uvrakim. There were sounds and thunder. Vanan kaved al ahar, and a great cloud over the mountain. V'kol shofar chazak ma'od, and the great sounding of the shofar. V'yecherad kol am asher b'machane, and everybody was frightened. V'yotze Moshe et am likrat ha'elokim min ha'machane, v'yitetzu b'tachtit ahar. Moshe brought everybody out to stand underneath the mountain, or at the foot of the mountain. V'har Sinai ashan kulo mipnei asher yarad alav Hashem. V'esh, God came down on the mountain like fire. There was great cloud over the fire. Vayal ashano ke'eshen ha'kivshan, the smoke went up like the smoke of the furnace. Ve'echadad kol ha'ar ma'od, the people trembled. Vayi kol ha'shofar holech v'chazek ma'od, the kol ha'shofar, the voice of the shofar, continued to get stronger. Moshe yedaber ve'alokim ya'anenu b'kol. Moshe would speak and the people would answer, and God would answer in a voice. I'm looking for a verse. I'll show it to you in a moment. Oh, sorry, I skipped it. It's Pasuk Yud Gimel. Lo tiga bo kisako yisakel lo yaro yare. Can't touch the mountain. Bimshoch hayovel, hemei alubaha. When do you go up the mountain? When can you go up the mountain? Bimshoch hayovel. What is the yovel? The yovel is another name for the shofar. What did we call it in Sefer Yeshua? Shofrot ha yovlot or hayovlim. Bimshoch hayovel. What does it say by us? In Yeshua, v'haya bimshoch bekeren hayovel. Perek vav pasuk hey. Compare vav hey to Shmot Yud Tet pasuk Yud Gimel. V'haya bimshoch bekeren hayovel. V'haya bimshoch hayovel hem yalu bahar. What is the significant moment when you can go up the mountain? Bimshoch hayavel, when either there's two interpretations to bimshoch hayavel, either when the shofar blows a loud single blast that indicates it's all clear, or when it stops. Either way, machloket of what took place. But the message, but the parallel to Yehoshua is very clear. The phraseology is identical. One step further, take a look at the second description of Ma'amar HaSinai. Ma'amar HaSinai is described twice. Perek Yud Tet, I just showed you, and the second is Perek Chof Dalet. After Parshat Mishpatim. And in Parshat Mishpatim it says, Pasuk, end of Pasuk. End of Perikov Dalid. Vayal Moshe al ahar, Moshe went up the mountain. Vayachas he'anan et ahar, the mountain was covered by the cloud. Vayishkon kvod Hashem al har Sinai, vayachaseu he'anan sheshet yamim. The cloud covered the mountain for 6 days. Vayikra el Moshe bayom hashvi'i mitoch he'anan. And on the seventh day, God called to Moshe from amidst the cloud, and Moshe entered into Umar Ekvod Hashem ke'esh ochelet b'rosh ahar, and the vision of God was a consuming fire on the top of the mountain. From the textual parallels, draw me a conceptual parallel. What essentially is the parallel being set out here? A parallel between Mamon HaSinai, the place of the giving of the Torah, or the paradigmatic place of Limud Torah, right? And the battle of Yericho. When Moshe stood at the mountain of Har Chorev, at Har Elohim, for the very first time, and he saw the appearance of a Malach, what did the Malach say to him? Take your shoes off. When the Malach came to Yeshua at the very same moment, the first time Yeshua sees this Malach at Yericho, what does the Malach say to him? Take your shoes off. 6 days and 7 days. 6 days and 7 days. The blowing of the shofar, the blowing of the shofar. The sounds of Mamad HaSinai, Kolot Uvrakim, the sounds of the blowing of the shofar at Yericho. Does it not suggest to you that the methodology, the battle plan of the conquest of Yericho is set in place to parallel the experience of HaSinai? Take 3 steps backwards and look at the context of the entrance into the land of Israel. How did they enter the land of Israel? Via the splitting of the Yarden, which was the preliminary nace that led them to Har Sinai back in Sefer Shemot. They went from Kriyat Yamsuf to Har Sinai. Yeshua leads the people from Kriyat Yarden to Yericho. The Malach is a Malach of the revelation of Sar Tzva Hashem, which appears or which Moshe is informed about in the context of Shmot Perachav Gimel, which is the revelation at Sinai. The parallels between the experience at Yericho and the experience at HaSinai is not an accident. The primary goal of Mamad HaSinai was not the giving of the Torah. What was the primary goal of the experience at Sinai? What was the primary purpose of Mamad HaSinai? It was not to give the Torah. That's not what the Torah says. The Torah says explicitly what the purpose of Mamad HaSinai is. Ba'avur yishma ha'am b'dabri imach v'gam b'cha ya'aminu le'olam. God says to Moshe that the people will hear me speak to you so that they will trust in you for eternity. The primary purpose of the revelation at Sinai was so the people could understand that God can communicate with a human being and that God has chosen Moshe as the go-between between Israel and the Jewish people, between God and Israel, to establish the credentials of Moshe Rabbeinu, to demonstrate the presence of God, the Gilui Shechina, the revelation of God. What God said at that moment is far less relevant than the fact that he said it. And that's precisely the purpose of the conquest of Yericho, was to establish Yehoshua be'enei ha'am, in the eyes of the people, to establish Yehoshua as the paradigmatic disciple of Moshe. We went from Kriyat Yamsuf to Mamad HaSinai. We went from Kriyat Yarden to the fall of Yericho. We didn't fight Yericho. We didn't fight Yericho. We said last week, what are the two strategic challenges facing Yehoshua in the fight of the land of Canaan? What are the two strategic challenges to Yehoshua? The walls, right, and the unity of the nation. Did Yeshua have to engage either one of those strategic challenges in the conquest of Yericho? No. Why? Because God did it for him. Did Yeshua have to breach the wall? No. Did Yeshua have to strategically draw the army that's inside the wall outside the wall? No. Did Yeshua have to find a way to isolate Jericho from the rest of the land of Israel? No. Why? Because the battle was fought by God from beginning to end. It was a moment of revelation of God in the midst of Canaan. It was a repeat of Mamad HaSinai from start to finish. Let's take this one step further. Now let's go through the answers that the Malach gives to Yehoshua. When Yeshua says to him, "Are you for us or against us?" Halanu imtan mitzarenu. Yeshua says, and God, and the Malach says to him, first of all, he says, "Lo." No. What does no mean? No to what? What question did he ask? The answer could be no. Are you for us or against us? Answer, no. Does that answer the question? Do you want coffee or tea? Yes. Right? Are you saying neither? So he's not for us, not against us? Right? Then he says, right, okay. So then he says, I am the Sar Tzva Hashem. What's a Sar Tzva Hashem? What's a Tzva Hashem? God's army? What do we mean? Tzva Hashem? What does God's army mean? Hashem Tzvaot. We say it every time we talk about the, we say the phrase, Hashem Tzvaot. God's army. What does that mean? Everything. God will fight all about us. We can sit in the basement and learn all day long. Is that what it means? Does God have an army? Does he have a tzva for which he needs a tsar tzva? Will you answer me that question? Does God have a tzva for which he needs a tsar tzva? Being a representative is one thing. Having an army, and therefore having an army general, is another. Does God have an army over which he needs a general? We did. We did, indeed. We did discuss this last year. We discussed it in one of my... And I've told you, I'll show you the story, and I'll show you, and I tell you now what I told you then, which is that it's one of my favorite stories in all of Tanakh. It's too textual for a drush. That's the difference, you see. In the drush, it's homiletic. This is pshat. Take a look at Perek Vav, Malachim Bet Perek Vav. Take a look at Malachim Bet Perek Vav. Malachim Bet Perek Vav. Story of Elisha. Elisha, it's the story of the king of Aram, who every time he goes to war against Israel finds that Israel is waiting for him and wins the battle because they are expecting the army to show up. And the king of Aram is very upset. He doesn't understand. How is it that every time he brings his army to another ambush, Israel's waiting for him? So he turns to his soldiers and they say to his officers, and they say, "You should know that take a look at the story of Pasuk Chet. Melech Aram ayah necham b'Yisrael, vayve'etzel avadav lemor amakom ploni almoni tachanoti. The king of Aram would fight against Israel, and he would say, "Take my army and let's camp there." Vayishlach ish elokim el melech Yisrael lemor yisham me'avor amakom hazeh, ki sham Aram nechitim. The ish elokim, the navi, would go to the king and say, don't pass that passage because Aram is waiting in ambush. Kitzer, it's better than a satellite. It's better than a satellite. It's got the best spy in the world. And this goes on and on and on. And finally, the king of Aram calls his people together and he says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, "Halo tagidu li mi mishalanu al melech Yisrael." Who's the spy? There's got to be a spy amongst us because somebody keeps telling Israel our battle plan. So they say to him, "No, it's not really a battle. It's not really a spy. What they really have is that Israel has a secret weapon." Ki Elisha hanavi asher b'Yisrael yagid lemelech Yisrael et hadvarim asher tadaber b'chadar mishkavecha. They have a navi who can tell the king of Israel what you whisper in the privacy of your bedchamber. That's their secret weapon. They have a Navi. So the king of Aram just devises a plan to get rid of the secret weapon, namely, take out Elisha. So he sends his entire army to surround Elisha. Skip down a couple of verses. Pasuk Yudalet, Vayishlach Shama Susim Verechav V'Chayel Kaved. The king of Aram sends to against Elisha horses and chariots and a great army. In the middle of the night, they come, they surround the city, they surround Elisha. The next morning, 6 o'clock, Elisha's servant wakes up to go out and get the morning paper so that he could read his coffee and paper, read his paper and have his cup of coffee. And he sees that the entire city or the hill where he lives is surrounded by our horses and chariots. And he says, so his servant, his disciple, comes to Elisha and he says to him, Aha, Adoni, Echana, say, well, my master, what are we going to do? So Elisha says to him, don't worry. Kirabim asheritanu masherita otam. Because we outnumber them. Elisha and his Na'ar outnumber horses and chariots and a great army. We outnumber them. Talk about a Muna Pshuta. Vayitpalel Elisha vayomar. Elisha prays. Now his prayer is fascinating because he doesn't pray for Yeshua. He doesn't pray for victory. He doesn't pray for God to help him. He doesn't pray that God should send a miracle. His prayer is Hashem pkachna et einei hana'ar v'yir'eh. His prayer is that God should open up the eyes of his disciple and that he should be able to see what Elisha can see. Vayifkach Hashem et einei hana'ar. God opened up the eyes of the na'ar. Vayar v'inei hahar male susim v'rechav esh. See what Elisha? And he saw that the mountain was filled with horses and chariots of fire. Eliyahu went up to Shemayim in a chariot of fire. There's an entire army of chariots and horses made of fire surrounding and protecting Elisha. The only problem was that the Na'ar couldn't see them. Who are these horses and chariots of fire? We call them Tzva Hashem. And to every army there is a Sar Tzva Hashem. And when Yaakov sends Malachim Lefanav, he sends messengers before him to meet Esav, and Rashi says, Malachim Mamash. Real angels. Why does Rashi take the pshat, the text, out of its context when Yaakov sends a message to Esav and Rashi says, no, he didn't send a messenger to Esav, he sent malachim, he sent angels. Why? Because the verse, the beginning of Pashat Vayishlach, comes in the heels of the end of Pashat Vayetze. And at the end of Pashat Vayetze, it says that when Yaakov returned from Aram Naharaim, from the house of Lavan, he reached a place Vayir... He reached a place, and vayifku ubo malachei Elokim, and he was met by malachei Elokim, angels. Vayomer Yaakov kasher ra'ah, when Yaakov saw them, he said, Machane Elokim ze. This is the Machane Elokim. I told you last week, there's no such thing as a Machane that's not a military camp. This is the Machane Elokim. What does he name the city? What does he name the place? Vayikra Shem HaMakom Ahu Machanayim. What does Machanayim mean? Forget what it means in camp. What does the word Machanayim mean? Two camps. Rego Raglayim, Yad Yadayim. It's a two plural. It's not a plural. It's a double. He calls it the double camp. He sees the camp of the angels and he calls it the double camp. Why is it a double camp? He saw the angels, so you should call it Machane. Why Machanayim? Why Machanayim? Who are the two camps? For Yaakov. Go back to Yaakov for a moment. Who are the two camps? His camp? And the camp of the angels. His army and the army of God. The Avot, the Nevi'im, understood that they, when it says that they met the angels to protect them, it meant literally. It's not hypothetical. This is not homiletic. This is not esoteric Kabbalistic concepts. This is Malachim who came to protect him. Malachim who he commands, who he charges, who he says, go take this Malachim and send him to Esav and send a message to him. And if Esav will deal with the Malachim, if Esav will conquer the Malachim, Yaakov will escape. We say Hashem Tzva'ot, Hashem of hosts, two. What do you mean Tzva'ot? Tzva'ot is always in the plural. Why two? Whenever we talk about Hashem Tzva'ot, we always talk about God of two hosts, plural. Us and God, us and God's army. Mi ze melech hakavod, Hashem Tzva'ot, hu melech hakavod tzela. What's the rest of that passage? Tzva always means army.
Two.
It can be more than two. Machanayim is only two. But the minimum of, but the concept here is very, it's real. It's not homiletic. Mize, finish the verse. Mize melech hakavod, Hashem izuz, v'gibor, Hashem gibor, milchama. Mize melech hakavod, Hashem tzvaot, melech hakavod tzela. Hashem tzvaot is Hashem gibor milchama. We're engaging in battle. We're engaging God on the battlefield. We're engaging the enemy on the battlefield. Who goes with us? Our army and army of God. Into every battle, there were two armies, the army of Israel and the army of God. And oy vavoy lanu if we ever went into battle by ourselves without the army of God with us. And that's a fundamental message that carries through Tanakh. That's why the phrase, the concept of Hashem Tzvaot is so central to Tanakh. Because the notion is that to every battle that we engaged, every time we went into the battlefield, we went with the second army. And that's the army of God. That piece of it we can translate to today. What I'm about to show you now, you can't. What was Yeshua? What was the Malach's message to Yeshua? Yericho? For Yericho? Take your shoes off. The same way God said to Moshe when he goes to Paro, take your shoes off. Who wears shoes? Today, everybody wears shoes. But in the ancient world, in the world of Tanakh, who wore shoes? Shepherds wore shoes because we're out in the desert. Not everybody wore shoes. Most people went barefoot. Who wore shoes? People who were either walking around the desert and needed to protect their feet, or soldiers. Military. When God spoke to Moshe at the burning bush and he said, I'm sending you to Paro. And Moshe said, Mi anoch, yalecha Paro, who am I that I should go to Paro? God said, you know what God said to him? He says, take your shoes off, Moshe. Equivalent of saying, put down your weapon. You're not going to Paro because you're going to negotiate the release of Israel. You're going to Paro because I'm sending you to Paro, and I will tell you what to say, and I will harden his heart, and I will do the miracles, and I will bring Israel out of Mitzrayim. This is my battle, it's not yours. And when we stood at the banks of the Yam Suf, and God said to Moshe, Hashem yilachem lachem atem tachrishun, this battle God will fight. And you will be silent. This one's God's battle. And what did we say in Shirat Hayam? What was our response in Shirat Hayam? Hashem, Ish Mechama. God is a God of war. The next battle, Amalek, will have to fight. The next battle after that, Sichon and Og will have to fight. But not Kriyat Hayardeh. Not Kriyat Yamsuf. And not Mitzrayim. Those are God's battles. What does the Malach say to Yehoshua? Three things. Number one, look, you've mistaken my purpose. My purpose here is not to assist you. You think I'm for you or against you? You've got it wrong. My purpose here is not to assist you. My purpose is to replace you. You go study Torah. Go back to the Beis Medrash, Yehoshua. Take your shoes off. Get out of the military business for now. Atabati. This battle is mine. Your role will come next. You'll have to deal with Ai, and you'll have to deal with the kings of Israel, and you'll have to deal with everything else. We're not there yet. But for right now, we are repeating Ma'amar HaSina. We are repeating the revelation of God. Your role is to blow a shofar. Your role is to sit in the Beis Medrash. That's what the Gemara said. Because the Gemara understood Yeshua, the message. Shal na'alecha. Take your shoes off. Take your soul, take your uniform off. This is not your battle. And this, in this particular case, I think the Radak missed this point. I think the Gemara got it 100% correct. Yeshua, the message of the Malach to Yeshua was, now, this battle, Yericho, is a revelation of God's presence to establish the power of God in the land of Canaan. To set the stage, like Kriyat Yamsuf and Ma'amar HaSinai, to set the stage for Israel and for the nations of Canaan to see what they're up against. God will fight this battle. You can take your shoes off. You can put your sword down. This Malach is standing there with the sword drawn. Sar Tzva Hashem. He will fight this battle to the end. The next one will be yours. Okay. We will stop here. Bezrat Hashem, 2 weeks from today, because next week I am out of town. We will convene in 2 weeks.